I'm Greg Johnson.
And I'm John Morgan.
I'm Michael Polignano.
Welcome to Countercurrents Radio. Our guest today is Augustus Invictus, fresh from the fields of the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville, and he's going to be telling us about his experiences. So, Augustus, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me, guys.
Well, let's talk about Unite the Right. Been hearing lots of firsthand accounts. I haven't heard a firsthand account from you yet. So, well, first of all, can you tell us a bit about the concept of it? I know you were one of the organizers. Can you tell us a bit about the overall concept and then tell us exactly how it all went down from your point of view on the weekend of Unite the Right?
Sure. The concept of it was exactly as it sounds. It was a rally specifically to unite the right, which, and by that we meant, you know, unite all the various right-wing factions into one mass movement, which is one of my main points in everything that I do. I always say unite the right, let's stop fighting, stop the infighting, stop, you know, squabbling among each other. We have one enemy, and that's to the left of all of us. So the entire point of the rally was to bring all these factions together and get everyone to finally say, all right, let's drop all this nonsense, let's form one movement. That quickly became a let's unite the alt-right when the alt-light started, you know, disavowing the event and distancing themselves from a lot of the other people. After all was said and done in the original organization of the thing, I was the only one left who was not an alt-right person there speaking. So, you know, we still were aiming to unite the right, and it was still our motive to unite all the right-wing factions, but that's how that came about. A lot of people, they were saying it was a free speech rally, which, I mean, you know, it was, but that was not really the impetus behind it. So that's how it started. As far as what happened this weekend, I mean, I could go on for an hour about that, so we might want to, where should we start?
Well, before we go into that, can you explain why the alt-light people bailed out, who bailed out and why, and who were the players who ended up coming?
Well, I wouldn't say anyone bailed because none of them were actually signed on. We had reached out to various people in the alt-light, more moderate people, more centrist people, and they simply declined to attend. So I wouldn't say they bailed on us. They just didn't want to participate in the event. And I'm reticent to name names because I don't want it to sound like I'm calling them out. It simply is the case that a lot of people do not want to speak with Richard Spencer. And I don't think that's offensive to say. I don't think he'd be offended by me saying that because, I mean, that's just a fact. And I think he knows that's what the case was. But, you know, a lot of people just didn't. They wanted to distance themselves from the event because of that. They didn't want to speak with him. The same thing happened when we did the Washington, D.C. event where we had a free speech rally at the Lincoln Memorial. And then the alt-light set up a separate rally at the White House. So, yeah, I wouldn't characterize it as bailing. I'd just say they declined to participate. As far as the second part of the question, who all did show up, there were still plenty of groups. I was part of several of them, the Proud Boys and Alt Knights. I mean, the Proud Boys were not there in an official capacity, I don't think, but there were Proud Boys there. Alt Knights, of course, they were there because that was my security team, and they came from all over the country. Traditionalist Workers Party was there. My group, the Revolutionary Conservative, was there. You had people from the alt-right, and you did have people from the alt-light, they just weren't speaking. And then you had the list of speakers who I think everyone knows at this point. They were surprise guests, you know. David Duke was there. Nobody was supposed to know that, and I think that was kept under wraps as far as I know. You know, Stephen McNallen was there. He was present, but I did not see him. And then the groups that came that were not, I mean, League of the South was there. The real controversy were, you know, the National Socialist Movement and the KKK, which they were not part of the organization process. I heard rumor that they were going to come, but I had nothing to do with coordinating that, and I don't think that the organizers did either. Like, the main organizers, I think everyone was like, look, we're not going to counter-signal them, but they were not part of the planning process, but that's most of the groups I can think of off the top of my head.
Well, you did have some more controversial groups, I know. They're like the National Socialist Movement,
right,
and, you know, other groups that I think were responsible for what I would say were the bad optics that you had coming out of the event, because it really made it a lot easier for the mainstream media to portray you guys as all being Nazis and so forth. I mean, I've been getting in arguments with people for the past few days saying that, well, I know a lot of the people who are there, and they're not National Socialists, and people come back and say, but we see photos of people Sieg Heiling and flying swastika flags. So what do you have to say about that? How did that come about?
Right. Like I said, we knew that they were going to come, but they were not part of the rally. As far as how they came with the National Front, I don't know. I wasn't part of those talks. But, I think the consensus was, if they show up, we're not going to throw out people that are there to support us. As far as it being a Nazi event, yeah, I've been hearing the same thing all day, every day, too, because the media is going to sell its narrative. And if they see a swastika, that's going to be the only picture on the news for 3 weeks. So no matter what we had done, they would have slammed us as Nazis and white nationalists and all the rest, white supremacists or whatever term of the day they wanted to use. But yeah, that did not help. I mean, I'll be honest, but again, that was not the organizer's intent. So there was nothing we could have done about that.
Well, of course, what we haven't talked about yet, and I don't blame anybody in Unite the Right for this, but of course the unfortunate, well, we still don't know if it was an attack or an accident or what, but this car that hit these people, how did you first find out about that, and how did the people involved in the event react? I guess most of you were already dispersed by that point.
Well, yeah, we were all dispersed. I mean, the rally was done. It was over at that point. All that mob in the street, that was the mob. That had nothing to do with the rally.
Is it true that the police actually took you down a path that were basically you had to come into contact with the counter demonstrators?
Yeah, wow. No doubt about that. Yeah, the police, they set us up. The city council of Charlottesville set us up. They put us in a kill box. I'll get to that. That's a whole another set of vegetables that got steamed. But as far as the car incident, we found out about that through social media. No one knew who the driver was at first. We didn't know all day. As far as how the other people reacted to it, I really don't feel at liberty to say. I know my own reaction is I've seen the footage, and a mob attacked the car, and then the car sped off. So I think anyone surrounded by a hateful mob of Black Lives Matter and Antifa getting their car hit with baseball bats and getting things thrown at them, I think anyone would have driven off. I mean, it's unfortunate that somebody died in that situation, but if a mob is attacking a car, what is the car supposed to do? Is the driver supposed to sit there and get killed? I don't think so. So that's my own reaction to it, but I like I said, I don't feel at liberty to talk about other people's reactions.
Right.
Okay.
Well, in terms of the chronology of the event, before everything that happened on Saturday, there was the Torchlight March on Friday. Right. So why don't we talk about that first, because that's something that's sort of been overshadowed by the events of the following day. I thought that looked like a very disciplined, well-organized, and pretty aesthetically appealing event. So tell us
about
that.
Yeah, I was impressed too.
Yeah, we have been, well, I have been, because I have, most of my people, we are not alt-right. And I have a lot of libertarians, a lot of moderates who are saying, how could you even be involved with something like that? Look at the optics of this thing. It's hateful. It's Nuremberg torch rallies. It's KKK symbolism. How could you possibly do this? That's what they think of the optics. And, how I think of the optics is this is one of the most epic and aesthetically beautiful things I've ever seen in my life. And I was proud to be a part of it. So I think that, being on the ground, being there, it was incredible. And you're right. It was very disciplined. We had people that were walking the lines back and forth, one as security to keep Antifa from coming up and blindsiding someone with a brick, or also to keep our demonstrators from attacking an Antifa who might get too close. So the security of the event was very tight. And they were also keeping us in a column. So we were supposed to be marching two by two. And that got out of line a couple times. I mean, it's not, a military march, but the rule of thumb was we should be marching two by two in this straight line. And I think that went wonderfully. I think it was very disciplined. It was a beautiful aesthetic, and I regret nothing about it.
No, I don't think you should. I was watching live while it was going on, and I was quite impressed. You know, I mean, it really exuded a real sense of unity that you guys were going for, and there wasn't any factionalism that was evident, and there was a real sense of strength and power being projected.
Absolutely.
I thought it was great.
And yeah, so as far as Unite the Right goes, I mean, yeah, like you said, there was no squabbling, there was no factional division, no one was yelling at each other, everyone was chanting together the same message, the same goal, walking in the same line towards the same place. I mean, it was total unification.
What were some of the chants?
We will not be replaced.
You know, in the media, they've been trying to say that you guys were chanting, Jews will not replace us.
I don't know if you're aware of that.
You can clearly hear that it's you. But
yeah,
I
was there. I didn't hear that. You know, I mean, yeah, there were racial epithets that were spoken during the weekend. There were certainly offensive things said during the weekend. But I think it's pretty clear to anyone who's seen the mainstream media versus the live streams during the event, there is a total parallel reality being created by the MSM that had nothing to do with what actually happened in Charlottesville.
I thought it was beautiful that they marched through the campus, the center of which was created by Thomas Jefferson, and they marched to his statue and encircled the statue. It was really a beautiful image of solidarity and piety towards the past, you know, unity between the people in the present and the people in the past. And this is very important because once they're done with all the Confederate monuments, they're going to go after Thomas Jefferson. They're going to go after everything because America is a racist, white supremacist country from its very founding, really into the 1960s. It was a racist, white supremacist country in terms of its culture and in terms of its laws. And that means that all of America has to go. This is a Taliban-style cultural revolution. They're going to be blowing up the memorials to people like Washington and Jefferson eventually. They're going to erase our past.
Yeah, they actually did take down on their own yesterday a Confederate monument in North Carolina. And I've made this point before that... Well, first of all, if the government doesn't do it, the radical left is going to do it on their own, which came true yesterday. And secondly, like you said, this has nothing to do with the Civil War or the South. This is about white people. Because if you look at what happened in New Orleans, they wanted to take down the Confederate monuments, this and that. But then they also said, take them down, NOLA. They wanted to take down the statue of Andrew Jackson. And Jackson fought in and won the Battle of New Orleans, and they want his statue taken down in New Orleans, and he died well before the war even started. So it clearly has nothing to do with slavery or the Confederacy or Southern heritage. It is all about taking down any monument to a white leader in this country.
I just want to point out that actually just before we started recording, I saw Donald Trump just gave a speech addressing Charlottesville. And he very emphatically said that both sides were at fault and that there were good people on both sides. That was the quote I read. And he also said, oh, so this week they want to take down Lee. Next week it'll be George Washington.
Exactly.
So it's interesting. He's actually kind of taking our line on this.
Yeah, that must have been what this girl ran upstairs to tell me while we were on the phone just now.
This would be his third speech on the Charlottesville topic then.
I guess his statement on Saturday, and then he said something else on yesterday, Monday, and then I guess today,
He's also tweeted alluding to the fact that the press is telling major lies about this, which I thought is pretty interesting. I'm really hopeful that as we get our narrative out there, as we get the truth about what happened on Saturday out there, that we can turn the tide a little bit in terms of public opinion. And that this will not be the disaster that the establishment wants it to be. And it's interesting who the establishment is. It's interesting to see all the people who jumped on board. Paul Ryan, little Marco Rubio, the disgusting opportunist Ted Cruz. All of these people jumped on board to signal against us. Of course, everybody connected with National Review, the neocons, all of these people jumped on this. They're worthless if we needed any, you know, reminder of that. They're utterly worthless. and so it was a nice, it was nice to get a reminder of that. But I think Trump is made out of better stuff. And I think that if the fact of the matter comes out that the violence did not come from Unite the Right, it came from the unleashed underworld of the far left, I think that can change everything. I'm hoping that there will be not some sort of sedition trials and things and witch hunts against the right like there would definitely have been under a Hillary Clinton presidency.
I don't know. I'd actually welcome a sedition trial at this point, as far as I'm concerned, you know, because they've been saying they're going to launch Department of Justice investigations into all of us who are organizing it. If they did put us on trial for this, I would welcome that opportunity because that would give us a platform to tell what actually happened.
Right.
And then they, you know, yeah, they would still try to twist the narrative, but it would be out there.
Yeah. I just hope that we get it out there before anything like that actually happens, right?
Yeah, that would be nice. That would be ideal.
So let's talk about Saturday.
Well, yeah, I'm kind of curious, too, if you could describe your own personal experience of, well, like one thing I haven't been clear about is some people say there was already sporadic violence even before the authorities shut down the event. So I'm curious what you saw of that and also just what you experienced and, you know, whether you were attacked by Antifa or police and, you know, all that. I'm sure we'd all like to hear about that.
Yeah, there was certainly sporadic violence before the dispersal. I don't know if I'd really call it violence, though. It was more like, you know, little kids on a playground. I mean, there were people that were taunting each other. There were minor scuffles. Yeah, Antifa threw some things, but nothing like, you know, mob violence, nothing like the war that you saw in the footage. Nothing serious happened whatsoever before the dispersal. From what I understand, because I was on the direct opposite side of the park when this happened, from what I understand, Black Lives Matter was pushing down the barricades on the other side of the park because the cops just walked away. They just walked away. And the barricades came down, and that's when the order to disperse came. But before that, nothing really had happened, aside from maybe some minor scuffles. I know that when the National Front came in, there was some hoopla on one side of the crowd there. But when I came in, which was before that, when I came in, I walked in with my security detail, and the worst I got was some woman running up and saying, "Fuck you, Richard Spencer." And I said, "My name is Augustus Invictus." And that was the end of that. You know, I didn't get sprayed. I didn't get anything thrown at me. I didn't get any punches thrown at me. Nobody shot at me. The worst thing that happened to me was I sweat a lot in my suit.
Well, that's kind of unavoidable under the circumstances, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, you're in the South in the summer. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
Well, if you'd worn a white seersucker suit, they would have used that against you as well, right?
Well, it would have been white supremacist, yeah, of course.
Definitely, yeah.
Well, what did you see when the police finally did disperse the event? What did you do? Where were you at that point?
I heard that there was an order that the police had issued the dispersal because I was on the other side of the park from the police who announced that. And it was security people coming out. And they were telling me that. So I walked out with the people going out. We were going to form a column on the street. But obviously the street was filled with Antifa and Black Lives Matter. So we just walked out there in a group, formed a line on the pavement. Everyone was behind us. And Kessler was standing right next to me. And, you know, everybody was formed in a group. And we marched out. And we started walking toward McIntyre Park. And that was really it. No one came after us. No one attacked us. I think the violence started when the back of the group, you know, started to leave the park. And that's where all the fights and the violence broke out. But we were all, you know, those of us who dispersed upon receiving the order, we all just walked down the street and nothing happened. I mean, you know, to see the footage that came afterward was kind of, you know, disheartening that we had missed it all on the one hand, but also, you know, we all were very lucky to have just walked out untouched.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I really, you know, when I've heard about what happened to Baked Alaska and some of the other people there, I mean, it's, I've also heard that Matthew Johnson also got maced quite badly in the eyes and that he might suffer some vision damage.
Yeah, there were a couple of people who really were maced pretty badly with bear mace. And yeah, I know there are one or two people, Baked included, who are looking at permanent blindness over this. And, I don't want to talk for Baked Alaska, but I do know that at one point he went to the hospital and they turned him away. They would not treat him and they said it would go away. So, it's not just the Charlottesville Police Department, not just the city council. The entire town was politically charged at that thing.
Well, let's talk about what comes next. And specifically, you were a lawyer. You have resigned from that profession, I understand. But as a former lawyer and as a political organizer, what do you see coming down the line in terms of lawsuits and lawsuit potential? Obviously, I think that civil and criminal charges could be brought against a lot of people in the city of Charlottesville, from the mayor and the vice mayor to the chief of police to really anybody who was colluding together to unleash the Antifa, and also to basically they engineered this. They engineered this violence. And that means that not only do Unite the Right people have a case for suing them, even the Antifa mob, anybody in that mob who got harmed, should be suing them too. And of course, given what kind of people they are, of course they'll sue. Are our people going to sue? And do you think we have a good chance? Do you think we can get the mayor out of office? Do you think we can get the governor to resign? I mean, this went all the way to the governor's mansion, as far as I can see. And at least we should proceed under that assumption at first, that there was collusion all the way into the mansion of the governor, and this was an operation where they basically decided to turn the city over to a violent mob and feed the Unite the Right people to a violent mob. That's criminal on so many levels.
Before you get to that, I was a little curious. Was the park that you were heading to after you left Lee Park, was that closed off to you guys as well? Or
not,
were you allowed to assemble
there? There came a point where we were kicked out of there. Everybody was kicked out of there. But at the time we were marching there, it was not closed off. And in fact, that was where the city council had removed our permit too. So they took our permit from Lee Park and made us go to McIntyre Park. We said we were going to Lee Park anyway, and they knew that. But no, when we were marching there, that park was open, and that's where most people had parked their cars.
Okay, but then this dispersal order, that affected
right.
Lee Park first.
Yeah. Well, it affected Lee Park first, but then it affected everything, and all of Charlottesville turned into a war zone because the state of emergency was declared. There were rumors, at least, that the cops were going around dispersing everyone everywhere, that nothing was, at that point, a lawful assembly, except, clearly, the Antifa mob that was allowed to run rampant through the streets. I know
what are
that
the plans the now?
Well, I'm not sure of the plans, but I do know that the ACLU has talked about suing under First Amendment rights, because they revoked the permit. ACLU sued to get the permit back and we won. And then they dispersed the crowd anyway, even though we had the permit and they stood down and they allowed this to happen. As for a tort though, as for the real lawsuit that we're talking about, There are absolutely grounds. So what happened was, like I said, they revoked the permit, got reinstated. They knew we were going to Lee Park no matter what. And law enforcement would not coordinate with our security people. They had a plan for what they were going to do the entire time. And what they did was they revoked our permit, even knowing we were going to Lee Park no matter what. And they gave permits to Antifa and Black Lives Matter in two adjacent parks. So they were legal, we were illegal. Originally, when we got the permit, the police were keeping Antifa and Black Lives Matter off the property, off of Lee Park completely. We had the entire park, everyone else was being kept out, and we were going to have a checkpoint so that only our people could get in. That was completely thrown out of the window, and they were going to allow everyone in. Now, we got the permit back, and we had a closed-off part. But even then, they had set up barricades and allowed Antifa and Black Lives Matter and everyone else onto the field, just in a different area. So they deliberately set up what we called a kill box, where we were all jammed into this tight space in Lee Park in this little corner, and everyone was allowed to surround us as a mob. So that was deliberate on the part of City Council of Charlottesville, on the part of Charlottesville Police Department, on the part of the Virginia State Police. They did collude, and they did this on purpose so that the mob would attack us. So they knew there would be violence. They knew people would die. And I told them that if anyone hurt us, we would hurt them back. And they were on notice that we were going to defend ourselves, and they set it up anyway. So they are 100% to blame for this fiasco.
Yeah, that's really not surprising. I mean, I've read that, I mean, of course, it's a university town. Those tend to be liberal anyway. And I read that in Charlottesville, 80% of the eligible voters there voted for, well, of the participating voters, I should say, voted for Hillary in the last election. So I think it's pretty
right.
I think it's pretty clear what the, you know, what the leanings of that community are.
Probably 90% of them voted for Bernie in the primaries, too.
Most likely. Maybe as far as future events go, maybe you should try to go to places where there's more grassroots support in the area or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, for one, if there actually is support in the area, then those are areas where they're not trying to take down our Confederate monuments. So,
good point.
You know, it tends to be in places where there are just a bunch of assholes and we have to go protest it. Yeah, that's really the main thing there is that we wouldn't have these problems if there were people with sense in the town.
So how many people ended up being arrested for violence, specifically Antifa people, and how many people ended up being arrested for civil disobedience on our side? Do you have any figures on that?
The only person I know was arrested for civil disobedience because he refused to disperse was Nathan D'Amigo. At least that's the allegation against him. I'm not saying he did it. As far as people arrested for violence, I saw in the news there were like 3 or 4 people arrested, but I don't know any of them, and I don't think they were our people. And of course, there was the one, the driver of the car who was arrested. But other than that, yeah, nobody was arrested. You know, this was just allowed to happen. And like I said, it was set up to happen.
No black guy with a flamethrower now cooling his heels in jail.
I don't think they arrested that guy, no.
Yeah, well, it's very interesting. We have all this footage, and I'm sure the Spurgs at Pole are combing through this and trying to come up with the identities of all these people. I hope that down the line pays dividends and that these people get arrested. And if they're not arrested for criminal charges, I hope that people can bring civil suits against them. Of course, that guy with the flamethrower probably didn't even own the aerosol can that he was using.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, if you file a civil suit, what are you going to get from them? That's what we call judgment proof.
Yeah.
Legal proof.
Yeah, exactly. The judgment proof mob. But yeah, something needs to happen. I'm so mad about all this. This is so unjust. It's so outrageous.
Yeah. Yeah, because not only is it set up, but then once we are set up and violence breaks out and our people do get hurt, then they go blame us for the violence that they caused. And then the mainstream media vilifies us for having started this entire affair. So, yeah, everything from beginning to end and everything in the prologue and epilogue is all manifestly unjust.
Yeah. So do you think we're doing an effective job, given our limited resources, in getting our account of this out there? It seems to have percolated into the office of the president, which is pretty amazing. I'm sure it's percolating into the lives of a lot of normie Americans, especially people who don't follow the mainstream media anyway anymore. So, I mean, do you think we're making any headway against these massive lies and outrages?
I think the best we can do is hope that we are. I know that there are a lot of more moderate, more mainstream conservatives who think of this as a huge failure because it makes them all look like Nazis. And I don't know what's going to have to happen for them to realize that to the left, they are Nazis no matter what they do. No matter how far they distance themselves from us, you know, they could have voted for Obama in 2008 and 2012. They'd still be Nazis. So they're very upset because they think we made them all look bad, and they refuse to listen to the firsthand accounts. They refuse to watch the live stream footage that we took there. They know that the media is lying. They know that. But what they're upset about is that the media should never have gotten this narrative to begin with. But that's neither here nor there. There's nothing you can do about that. As far as the normies are concerned, yeah, I would hope that they watch the live streams and they talk to those of us who were there and they see what happened from firsthand sources rather than watching the mainstream media. That's about all we can hope for.
I think you're right, but still, you know, just to go back to the point I made earlier, though, I still think that what's going to stick in people's minds is those images of swastikas and,
yeah,
and so
absolutely.
Forth.
There's no doubt about that. I mean, I've already lost several friends, and I mean, I don't mean like Facebook friends. I mean real friends that I've had for years who know my platform, know everything I've done politically, knew that I was speaking at this rally. But they saw the footage of the rally and they saw what's on the mainstream media, and they have completely cut ties with me on a personal level. So, you know, there's no doubt that if people that close to me are that affected by the mainstream media, then there are certainly people out there who know nothing of any of this going on underground that are going to be completely brainwashed by it.
Well, and the other aspect is that I've noticed in the reports – they keep hammering home this point that three people died. So it's like, you know, they want to make the Unite the Right responsible even for those two police officers who died in an unrelated accident. It's very clever what they're doing. I mean, it's very obvious, but it's really annoying to see.
I think that they should comb the nursing homes of the area and to find how many old people died during Unite the Right and add that to the death toll. Why not?
Yes, right. They were so shocked.
22 people died in Charlottesville during Unite the Right. Why not? Why not blame everybody who died in the state of Virginia on Saturday to this? If
yes,
by their criteria of connection, they could. It's an utter absurdity. Of course, they'll never give any credit for Unite the Right to any babies born during that time, right?
Right.
But. I want to ask about a couple organizational things. In addition to the people who were actually protesting, how many people were assigned to sort of blend in with the crowd, to hang back and film things, to be watchers, basically, as well as protesters, to guard cars, well, to watch over this thing and make sure that it happened all right? Were there any people who were assigned to do duties like that?
Yes, I couldn't tell you numbers, but I can tell you that at the parking lots, there were armed people there to protect the cars, because that was a concern everyone had, that if we leave these cars unattended, obviously Antifa is going to know where we are and they're going to come bash all the windows in and, you know, set things on fire. So, yeah, there were people there guarding the cars and I saw them myself. That's a fact. As far as the live streams and observers, I think we were banking on the fact that there would be live streams there and that everything would be on camera no matter what. And that was correct. You know, I was live streaming. Everybody there was live streaming that had a phone. So everything got recorded. As far as people hanging back, you know, there were security there. We had security out the yin yang. So we had people with shields. We had an entire shield wall. And that was part of one group. And then we had my people that were all in uniform that were there just for providing security for people. And then we had completely plain clothes, concealed carry people where nobody would know, but they were ready to drop the hammer. I mean, I was concealed carrying as well, but there were people assigned to do basically plain clothes work, as we might say. As far as the numbers, though, I couldn't give you a fair estimate of that.
Well, that's a need-to-know thing, so.
Well, that too. Yeah, even if I did know, I probably wouldn't be advised to tell you.
Well, I'm always thrilled when people say, I can't tell you, that's need to know. It makes me feel like I'm part of a really serious movement.
Well, I was just going to say one aspect I didn't hear anyone mention, which of course they won't because it doesn't fit into their narrative, is the fact that there were so many armed people among the demonstrators, and yet, you know, there were no shootings. I mean, that was something that the media was, you know, trying to scare people about before the rally, was that, you know, there was going to be all these killings. And I saw some of the photos, and, you know, the question of whether people should have been openly carrying long guns is probably another issue. But, you know, regardless, I saw those people and it's like they could have, you know, if they had fired, it would have been very bad for the for the counter demonstrators who were there. To their credit, nobody did, and that was never mentioned, that the people did remain disciplined. They didn't fly off the handle and start shooting.
Exactly the point that I've been making in all the interviews I've been doing about this, is that we showed, the right wing, our people there showed extraordinary self-restraint, because we were all armed and we could have just, wiped the field with them. There would have been no contest. I mean, the police, on the other hand, of course, they all had firearms. That would have been another story. But as far as people fighting back when they were attacked by the mob, I had no plans. And I told everybody this going in. I told the detectives, I told the police this too. I had no plans of getting in a fist fight. If someone attacked me, I was going to shoot them. And I'm really, proud of the people who were attacked and still didn't shoot people, because I would have if I were in that position.
Yeah, well, especially this group of people who were attacked with the improvised flamethrower.
Yeah, that requires lethal force, in my opinion. It requires a lethal response, because they're not playing around. They're not like, oh, I'm just going to burn this guy a little. I mean, they are trying to kill you.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you are completely within your right to respond with lethal force.
If you are sincerely in fear for your life, you should be able to respond with appropriate lethal force. And bricks, acid, flamethrowers, all of these things are lethal weapons.
They are. They are. And there's a mob of several thousand of them. So, yeah, I'm not going to distinguish between a fake, funny attack with a flamethrower and a real attack with a flamethrower intended to kill me. To me, it's one and the same.
Well, from your point of view, I mean, what are you going to do? Wait until you're dead before you, decide, okay, I guess this guy was serious, right?
I thought he was joking, what he said to St. Peter.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, if a police officer were confronted with that sort of thing, there's no question that they would be justified in using lethal force.
No doubt.
So.
Yeah, I mean, if something had happened to those police officers that had happened to our people, like the guy who got his face bashed in with a brick, that cop would have shot him on the spot, no questions asked, and no one would have faulted him for it.
So let me ask you about lawyers and legal things. First of all, I pray that everybody who went to this was shown, given a link to the video about do not talk to the police if you get arrested, get a lawyer, do not talk to the cops. How well drilled were people on that basic rule?
They were not, actually. And I think that was a failing on our part. Fortunately, it didn't materialize. So there was no real problem with that. Nobody got arrested.
Well, the driver got arrested. And I'm just praying that that guy clammed up and asked for a lawyer, because given the video, I think he could definitely be acquitted on self-defense, grounds of self-defense, if he didn't make some dumb statement to the cops, some statement full of bravado. I've been watching. I want to find out more about what's happening with him. And the second thing is, were there actual lawyers who were available in Charlottesville for people who got arrested? Did we have some people licensed to practice law in the state of Virginia on call in case some of our people got arrested?
Right. As to the first part about the kid driving the car, it's my experience that if someone is talking to the police even after they've been advised not to speak to them, they are doing so because they are speaking out of fear, because they think that talking to them is going to help them somehow. They're going to, go easy on them if they tell them everything they think they want to hear. It's never out of a sense of bravado, like, yeah, I did it, fuck you. I've never seen that happen before. It's almost always, this kid is scared, he's telling them what they think they want to hear, and they're going to slam him for it. Right. So even if he did make a statement, I don't think it would be anything like the mainstream media would say. Like, yeah, I just wanted to kill a bunch of black people that day.
Right.
There's no way that that would happen.
That's reassuring.
Yeah, I really don't predict that happen. I would be surprised. I mean, anything can happen, but I don't think that's what happened. As for the second question, as to the attorneys present, I was there, but I'm not licensed to practice in Virginia. As far as having a staff of attorneys there, no, we did not. As far as having legal representation, like I said, a lot of people were recording, and I think we were depending on that fact for the truth to come out. but they were also, and I could see them from where I was standing inside the park, they were ACLU legal observers out there on the street. So they could see everything happening out there, and it is their job to be witnesses in cases in the event that something does happen. So that's about as good as you can do.
That's good. I was also told that the local authorities had set up video monitoring and stuff like that. I assume that all of that footage could be subpoenaed if necessary.
It can be subpoenaed. You know, the thing is, you know, you would have to assume that they're going to do their best to keep that information private because it would show that we were correct and that they set us up and mm-hmm. that they didn't do anything and they didn't do their jobs. On the other hand, that would open a whole new can of worms because that would be destruction of evidence or tampering with evidence if they did try to get rid of it. And if they withhold the evidence, then you can file a motion to compel and get it anyway. So, yeah, hopefully that did exist. And if there is a lawsuit that comes about, we could subpoena that and that would prove our case.
Yeah, I would love to start seeing all of these big and little fishes in the city of Charlottesville being put under oath and ask some questions about this. It's astonishing how easily people will engage in all kinds of criminal conspiracies. And then you put them under oath and it's suddenly they realize, oh my God, this is really serious. I actually have to answer truthfully here. These things can unravel really, really quickly when you start putting people under oath. So,
yeah, because everybody's going to turn on each other. You know, it's never that someone's just going to spontaneously tell the truth because, oh, I believe in this oath so much, I want to tell the truth because that's the good person to me talking. It's usually, all right, if I don't talk, Mayor Singer's going to talk. Or Mayor Singer's thinking, well, if I don't talk, then Wes Bellamy's going to talk. So one of us has to be thrown under the bus and it ain't going to be me. So, right. Yeah, once you have everyone under the gun, then people start turning on each other and things come to light.
Yeah. When you're dealing with people of despicable low character, you can bet on that kind of stuff. Yeah, you can really bet on low character coming out when you place a little bit of pressure on them. And so I think the time has come to get these people under oath and to start getting them to squeal. And from the looks of them, you know, I feel like the Joker. I recognize a squealer.
Exactly.
You know, and these Wes Bellamy is a squealer. You know, I'm pointing my finger at Wes Bellamy right now. I recognize the squealers. I mean, this guy probably has an IQ of 90. He seems like a babbling imbecile with a lot of bravado and
no being very ability. Generous.
Yeah. So it's going to be fun.
How do you guys feel about relying on the ACLU to, fight your battles, their legal team and everything like that?
Yeah.
Can they, yeah.
I think we're all uncomfortable about that. I don't think anyone, you know, trusts the ACLU as far as they can throw them. You know, my personal opinion of the ACLU is wrapped up in the fact that they're a communist organization that was originally intended to bring about communism. I can't let go of that. But that being said, you have to give credit where credit's due, and they stepped up to the plate and they won that lawsuit. They won the injunction. We got the permit back. And as of yesterday, they responded to the governor of Virginia because the governor said, well, if the ACLU hadn't gotten the permit back, none of this violence would have come out. And the ACLU said, no, 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 no. You set this up. This is your failure and the city council of Charlottesville. And they went after him. And, you know, their actions speak for themselves. So I can't blame the ACLU for their track record because their track record's on point at this time. So we'll see what happens. But, you know, I can't fault them for what they've done so far.
We'll take any allies that we can get as long as they actually are allies. And I think it's great that the ACLU is helping out at this point. It might change, but as long as they're helping now, this is great. We need all the help we can get.
Amen. Yeah. And, you know, it's just great to see the ACLU actually doing what they say they are supposed to do, which is defending civil liberties in this country. If they would do this more often, I'd sign back up.
Can I just ask one basic question that I'm wondering about just because people have been asking me and I don't know? Is there any reliable estimate of the number of people who participated in the demonstration?
The estimates I've heard are that we had about 1,000 people and they had about 3,000 people. As far as the number of police, I don't know, but it seems to me they were greatly outnumbered by both camps.
Okay, but still, I mean, that's 1,000 people for an event like that. That's really good.
Oh, yeah. It was huge. It was, you know, hailed as the largest, they call it a white nationalist rally, but characterizations aside, they call it the largest rally of its kind in decades. And it really was.
Oh, that's great, because I think we've kind of become known over the last couple of years as primarily internet movement. So, whatever else happens, at least now we've established that we actually exist in the real world.
Right. And these were not just people coming around from Virginia or even just from the south of the East Coast. I mean, people were coming. We had an entire contingent of my people from Colorado. We had people coming from Canada. We had a whole group of people come down from Montreal. So it wasn't even just American. It was international. It was huge. It was in person, and it was undeniable that this is a force to be reckoned with now.
Yeah, it seems like there wasn't very much infighting, if any, on the right.
Infighting, and that, we pulled that off. The whole Unite the Right thing, 100% accomplished, because everyone was focused on a common enemy that day. So I'm really proud of that fact.
I would like us to see that focus now on getting the truth out about Charlottesville. But beyond that, I think there need to be more events like this. So are you planning, or do you know of people who are planning future Unite the Right type events?
I know that there is one that is called Unite the Right that is coming up in Chicago. I don't know the organizers, and I don't know anything much about it. I know we were talking about doing one out in California in October, but no plans have been formalized. I do know that a lot of people are still reeling from Charlottesville because a lot of people got hurt. A lot of people are under the gun. Everyone is being doxxed, every single person there. So people are still dealing with the fallout. So if we do have another Unite the Right event, I don't think it'll be in the next week or two.
Yeah, definitely. One thing that I've been discussing and others have been discussing is the difference between events where you do something, well, without giving the enemy advance notice and time to organize, versus events where you give them a long lead-up time to prepare to counter you. And one question I have about the Torchlight March was there any advance notice given about that, or was that just sort of sprung? Because I know there were some protesters around, but hardly any. And I certainly heard nothing about it in advance. Was that just a sort of a secretive flash mob kind of thing?
It was secretive, but it was not a flash mob. It was certainly set up, and we were planning it the entire time. But it was very much invitation only. It was not open to the public. There was no Facebook event page for it. It was very much, the people in leadership, we brought our groups, and it was very quiet. I mean, it still leaked. So there were still protesters. The media showed up. Somebody, was giving the information out, but it was not advertised, so it wasn't nearly as public as the day's event the next day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my feeling is that that was very effective, primarily because, of course, it wasn't smashed up by communists. And I think we need more events like that, because we need to have more of these things. I'd love to have things like this happening in every major city every week, all the time, year round. And second, if we can reduce the cost and risk involved by having things that are basically kept in secret and then sprung on the world, photographed, disseminated, and then the people go home, like the identitarians do in Europe quite a bit. I think that is a great way of keeping the momentum going while lowering our cost and risk at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. If we could organize these sort of more underground military operation style events like the Torch Rally or things like Generation Identitaire out in Europe are doing, where they're more surprise attacks than they are daytime rallies. I think that would be hugely effective, both from a propaganda standpoint, because we're not getting attacked, and also from the standpoint that, it's getting the message out there in a way that's more effective because the mainstream media can't twist it around on everybody. So, yeah, I am 100% in agreement with you there.
Well, Augustus, I think we've been going on for about an hour, so we should start thinking about wrapping up. John, Mike, do you have any final questions or thoughts?
No, I definitely support what you guys tried to do at the event over the weekend, in spite of how it turned out. I just hope that we're all able to get past, you know, how the media is trying to portray it so that we can get our actual message across. I think it's going to be a lot harder at this point, but we still have to try.
Well, Augustus, I know that you're going to be speaking at the upcoming Northwest Forum. I wish I could be there for that.
Yeah, that's going to be awesome. I've never given a speech on Carl Schmitt, and I'm excited to do so. I might even tie it in with Yaki, since I know that that's going to be part of the theme of the event. So those are two of my greatest intellectual influences, so I'm excited to go.
Well, you know, I guess that Yaki actually plagiarized Schmitt a little bit in Imperium.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. It's like reading a rehash of Schmitt.
Yeah.
There's no doubt.
One of the things that I commissioned when I was editor of the Occidental Quarterly was a Schmitt scholar going through Imperium and the Enemy of Europe. And there's an article, I guess it came out in 2010, in the Occidental Quarterly, where he basically goes through and just exhaustively and crushingly demonstrates that, yes, Yaki did plagiarize a whole ton of Schmitt. So I have to give him credit, because otherwise I wouldn't have been exposed to these ideas as soon as I was. It took me a few years to get around to reading Schmitt after I had read Imperium. So anyway, he didn't put it out under his own name anyway. So it's not like he was taking credit for Schmitt's ideas. I just think
right. He
was a propagandist, and he wanted these ideas to circulate, and he didn't really care about niceties like footnoting and things like that. It's not like Martin Luther King or plagiarizing your school paper. He wasn't taking credit for somebody else's ideas at all. In fact, he actually took the book to Sir Oswald Mosley and said, "Hey, I've written this book. Would you like to put your name on it?" That would have been a terrible trap if Mosley had set his foot in it. We'd be talking
right.
about how Mosley was a horrible plagiarist now. But yes, so I am looking forward to meeting you later this month. It's not too far off, Augustus. So thank you so much for...
Back at you.
Thank you so much for coming on and for clearing some stuff up. And this is just going to be the first of many conversations, I hope.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Absolutely. I would like to say, as a parting remark, it might seem as though through this entire conversation, I've kind of taken credit as one of the main organizers. I was really one of the minor, lesser organizers. I recruited a couple speakers, and I recruited people, and I was involved in a lot of it. But the credit, I think, really goes to, a lot of people I can't name. I mean, they know who they are, but, without them, this would never have happened. And that really goes for Jason Kessler as well, because a lot of people have been giving him flack about how this all fell out, you know, and how things happened. And they're giving him a bad time over how the mainstream media is treating it. But if it weren't for that guy, I mean, in his pure force of will, this event never would have gone off. So I think they deserve a lot more credit than they got. And I deserve a lot less credit than I've been given.
Yeah, I want to talk to Jason, too. The poor guy's just been deluged. I tried to talk
Absolutely.
To him when I was at Amren, and we could just never find a time when we were both in the same room to talk. But yeah, I'm impressed with him. He's really put up with a lot. He's going to be putting up with a lot more of harassment in the future. You've got to be strong to deal with this kind of stuff. I really give him credit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, well, let's wrap here then. And thank you again. And we'll be definitely having you back for another episode of Countercurrents Radio.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to it. Thank you guys very much.